You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
But this morning, we're going to continue our series, The Future is Now. And we've been in this series for about 2 weeks. And if you don't have a Bible with you or an electronic copy that you're comfortable using, if you raise your hand, one of our ushers will bring you a Bible. And you'll want one because we're going to work through some scripture this morning. And if you want to go ahead and find Ecclesiastes, that's where we're going to be parked most of the time. But related to the series, The Future is Now, you know, there are some rides in life you don't get to choose whether you get on or not, right? And that's what we want to talk about this morning, is there is this experience that is universal, it is timeless, it has existed always, and that is change. Life is always changing. It's a little bit like the Texas weather. If you don't like it, wait 5 minutes and it will change. So I want us to get to know each other a little bit this morning as it relates to change. So by a show of hands, how many of you would say you really like change? You are a minority, okay. How many of you say, I hate change? Absolutely not. Okay, there's a lot of you who are not voting today. That's okay. How many of you would say this, whether I like change or not, the worst kind of change is the change I don't get to choose? Consensus. I see consensus now. Yes, we know that. The worst kind of change is the kind that we don't get to choose for ourselves. Okay, here's another question. How many of you would say you've gone through some kind of major life change in the last 12 months? You changed jobs, moved, got married, divorced, had kids. Okay, everybody, if you've gone, yeah, that's a lot of people. That is a lot of people. Change happens. I think that we could say to say life happens is to say life changes. To say that life happens would be to say that life changes. It's one of the few constants. You know what's interesting is researchers have found that regardless of whether the change you experience is positive or negative, it creates stress. All change creates stress. Have you ever heard of the Holmes-Rahe inventory? This may sound familiar to some of you guys. I talked about this a couple years ago, but it was created to study the correlation between levels of stress and the tendency for people to get sick after times of intense stress. So this is just a couple of the ones that I pulled out for you guys to look at, but it's ranked on a scale of 1 to 100. And they did this, and the researchers, the middle point that they gave was marriage as a 50. And then once they gave this to the initial group, they said, okay, now score all of the other experiences around that. So for those of you who are single and have not yet experienced marriage, let that say something to you. Marriage is a 50 on the scale. So once they assign that, they take this and they correlate it, and they have this key that shows you this level of stress indicates that you would have this percent likelihood of having a major health breakdown in the next 2 years. That's what they looked at. So I went ahead and I scored my past year. It was a really good year, so I was like, this shouldn't be too stressful. So if you'll go ahead and go to that next slide. There we go. We've had major holidays in the last 12 months. I went on a really fantastic vacation. We have been doing a cleanse like we do at the beginning of every year, so I've had major changes in my eating habits. That's a 15 on the stress scale, and I can tell you that's accurate. Changes in residence. We had a friend who came and lived with us for a month. It was amazing, wonderful. If Janice ever needs another place to live, I highly recommend her. We had revisions in personal habits, you know, with things trying to get back into running. Major changes in responsibilities at work. We did this huge portfolio shift this year. Major change in the health of a family member. We got a couple of diagnoses related to our younger daughter, Haven. And so my score was a total of 157. It's been a good year. Do you want to know what 157 tells us? Let's look at this key. 150 points or less means you have a relatively low amount of life change and low susceptibility to stress-induced health breakdown. I passed that threshold, guys. I was 157, so between 150 and 300 means you have a 50% chance of a health breakdown in the next 2 years. If you are over 300, which my first year of marriage I scored and it was a 331. There is an 80% chance of health breakdown in the next 2 years. Now, I want you to notice that a lot of the changes that are listed up there are positive changes. A lot of them are positive. But even positive change creates stress. It creates anxiety. It creates the shifting. So why is change so stressful? Even whenever it's positive, why does it put us in a condition where we are more likely to have a health breakdown, even when things are good, changing for the good? Well, our situations change faster than we do. Our situations change faster than we do. We don't immediately change with our situations. Consider what happens when you start a new job. You're excited about the job. From the first day, you are inundated with changes. The location, the coworkers, the office policies, the office politics, the software the company uses. Maybe you have to switch from a Mac to something else. Everything changes immediately except for you. You take time to adapt. You take time to adapt. And that's the second reason why change is hard. We ourselves adapt little by little. Major changes in human beings do not generally happen on a dime. It takes time. We adapt little by little. I mentioned that Joel and I are in our annual cleanse. This is the fourth year for us to do it in a row. The first couple of years when Joel and I started doing this, the staff were all like, oh gosh, both of our bosses are in a cleanse at the same time. But we're better now. We've got 4 years of muscle memory in this. And my first year, it was hilarious, guys. If you know me, like, food is my love language. And so about halfway through, it's only a 21-day cleanse. But like halfway through this cleanse, I was dying. I was like, I need some chocolate. And Joel told me, he's like, okay, well, why don't you go get some? It'll help you get through the rest. You just need a little cheat. And I was like, okay. So I went to Cheesecake Factory. I got the chocolate truffle tower, and I ate that thing like it was oxygen, and someone was telling me I couldn't breathe for the next 10 days. But I've matured since then. So this last week, it was like day 7, I think, and I was working on my sermon, and my habit for the last 9 years or so is when I work on my sermon, I have a nice little Cubano cortado, breve. It's delicious. And you're not supposed to have that when you're on this cleanse. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to work on my sermon, and all I can think about is this stupid Cubano cortado. And I'm really trying hard to work on my sermon, but this little delicious drink is, like, absorbing my attention. And so finally, I decide that the emotionally healthy thing to do is to just go get the coffee. But everybody on staff knows that we're doing this cleanse, and I was a little embarrassed. And so instead of coming back through the office where everybody would see me, I walked back in through the venue and went in there, and I'm walking to go down into the pit where nobody else is working so no one will see me. And as I'm walking through, I hear Mimo Morielli's voice, and he goes, "You did not." And I was like, "I did." So we change little by little. It wasn't a 7-layer chocolate cake this time. That's growth. That's a win. So this funny, if slightly embarrassing, example demonstrates that even when we want the changes in life, they're hard. They take time. It's not, we just don't change quickly. And sometimes when we're pursuing change, we can start to feel stuck, right? Sometimes we feel stuck in the change of external situations. But I want to encourage you that if you are in a situation or a pattern and you feel stuck, be gentle with yourself, because it takes time to make lasting changes. It takes time to make changes. You're going to have to learn some new skills. You're going to have to get some new support. You're going to have to maybe even try some new spiritual practices to move forward. But be really gentle with yourself when you're feeling stuck in a season or a pattern. It takes time to grow into things. I think the New Testament writers understood this. The Apostle James wrote this: "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, whether those are external changes or these internal places we're trying to grow. because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask of God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. According to James, when we face trials of many kinds, we can throw major life changes and personal growth into that category. We are to consider it pure joy because it is taking us through this process of perseverance and maturity and growth. And so why sometimes are changes hard? Well, the other reason that James suggests is we're just not mature yet. We're still maturing. That's why change is stressful. And if you're sitting there thinking, Rachel, what I'm going through is really hard, it is actually stressful, I believe you. I believe you. Have you sat with someone, though, who you consider to be wise and who's maybe a little bit or a lot further along in life than you are? The thing that strikes me about people who really mature as they age is it seems like there's this perseverance that grows out in them and things don't bother them the way that it bothers the rest of us. Have you ever seen a grandma with a crying baby? Is that grandma worried? No. Have you ever seen a new set of parents with a crying baby? Oh my gosh, you feel so sorry for them. It's like the most stressful thing in the world, and you just want to walk up and be like, it's okay, that baby's not bothering. And I love to get sat on the airplane by the parents with the crying baby because I just want to reach over and tell them, it's okay, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about the rest of these grumpy pants. And what happens is that as we mature, what we learn to do is accept life as it comes. We recognize that there is this pattern in life. It is always going to change. There's always going to be difficulty in growth. There's always going to be opportunities to grow. The wisdom writers understood this. Ecclesiastes, man, that's why we're going to sit in it, because I studied it so much this week. And it is, I love this book because it's one of those that holds all the contradictions of life in tension. And it doesn't offer you easy answers, and it offers a whole lot of questions before you get to the end where there's some kind of resolution, but not really. It's a great book. But the author of that, this is what he says in Ecclesiastes 3, and if you guys want to turn there, go ahead. And I want to start reading in verse 1. He says, there is a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, which if you don't know what that means, some scholars suggest it's a sexual innuendo, kind of like sowing your wild oats. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What you hear in this ancient wisdom writer is that it all belongs. And that takes a lot of maturity to accept. That every season of life has its place. It doesn't mean it's always good, but it does mean this is the way the world works, which means this is the way God works inside of this world in all of its seasons and all of its times. Go ahead and flip over to Ecclesiastes 7. I want to read a couple of verses for me. I'm going to read verse 10 and then verses 13 and 14. Verse 10 says this, do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. And when times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. Whew. That's the thing about God that makes us so uncomfortable. is he is in every season. But man, I wouldn't have it any other way. All of those seasons, that's the way that the world works. And so I'm so glad God is in each of them because I need him. I've never been through a season of life that I did not need him. This is the way the world works. And sometimes you get really negative about it. It can be really stressful. There's an interesting study by Dr. Kelly McGonigal. McGonigal, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you may appreciate that name in particular. Dr. McGonigal is a health psychologist who studies inner conflict and stress. Some of you may be familiar with the TED Talk she gave in 2015 about how important a person's beliefs are about their experience of stress. Any of you guys familiar with this? Fascinating. And what Dr. McGonigal admits is that for a long time, she saw stress as bad. She assumed that stress meant you were going to have this breakdown in your health, and things were, if you were stressed, it was just bad. But she began to question these conclusions when she saw a study of 30,000 U.S. adults over 8 years, and what it demonstrated is there is a 43% increase in the likelihood of death for those who are under great stress, but only for those who believed the stress was bad for them. For those who believed the stress was good, that it was doing good things in them, there was no correlation. Only for those who believed the stress was bad for them did it negatively impact their health. So, change is stressful because our situations change more quickly than we do. It takes time for us to adapt. It takes time for us to mature into the kind of people who can handle the good and the bad and accept it. Not as something terrible happening to us, but as a part of the world and a place where we can meet God. I want you to look back at Ecclesiastes 3. The thing that I appreciate so much about the way that this wisdom writer paired this is what you have is he keeps showing you like opposite sides of the same coin, flipping it back and forth. And it's like you hear him whispering to you, life does not always come out heads, and that's okay. And that's okay. There's space in life for tension and for contradictions. And friends, what I want you to hear this morning is wherever you are on that side of the spectrum, wherever you are, whether it's a season that you can find great joy in, or a season of great pain, or you feel like you're flipping back and forth between the two, what I want you to hear this morning is you are going to be okay. It is going to be okay. And Ecclesiastes, the word that this wisdom writer uses to describe life is hebel, H-E-B-E-L. And what that word is sometimes translated as is vanity or meaningless. But the word itself, it's the literal picture that's associated with it is a vapor. And so what this wisdom writer is saying over and over and over again throughout Ecclesiastes is it's all vapor, friends. None of this lasts. We're going to move from one season into the next, and that is the way of the world. And the Apostle James in James 4 tells us, he says, hey, you are but vapor. So we are well matched to the way that the world works. We are but vapor. Life is but vapor. It is always changing. And so I want you to think about this. If that is the nature of our world, how cold and hard do we have to grow to stay unchanged? If the nature of human existence is vapor, if the nature of this world is vapor, how hard and distant and cold do we have to grow to stay unchanged? That is not the kind of life God's invited us to be unimpacted by the things around us, by the people around us. So, go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes 9. If you are feeling stuck in a season, or you're in a season that you're not enjoying, it's going to change. But rather than just waiting for that to come and trying to remain unchanged, I want to encourage you, every season has gifts. Every season of life has gifts. Sometimes you grow in wisdom. Sometimes you experience the love of your community. Sometimes it's just learning that we're not in control. But every season has gifts. In Ecclesiastes 9, this is what is written. So I reflected on this, all of this, and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they are and what they do are in God's hands. but no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. All share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who don't. Skip over to verse 7. So go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has always approved, he's already approved of what you do. Always be clothed and white, and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy a life with your wife whom you love, and all the days of this meaningless, hebel, vapor-filled life that God has given you under the sun. All your days are meaningless. He's a real chum. For this is your lot in life, and in your toilsome labor under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the realm of the dead where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. You know, I used to read this book and get really, it just made me really uncomfortable. But coming back to it all after all of these years, I found this real settledness with it. Because I'm like, yeah, this is what life is actually like. There are all of these contradictions and all of this tension. And just, yes, this is what life is like. This is what life is like. And what we see in Ecclesiastes 9:1 is he says, take life as it comes. What do we do about all the stress? How do we grow in maturity? How do we move to a place where we're actually growing because of our seasons of life? We learn to take life as it comes. In verse 9:1, it says, the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no one knows whether love or hate await them. And then he takes that, and you put it in this bigger context of him saying, and everything is vapor. And everything is vapor. And he applies that to the good and the bad and all the change and all the possible circumstances of life. But what I love is he says, but we're in God's hands. And all of it, we are in God's hands. When we lived in the Philippines, there was this class that we were in, and we had this professor, Dr. Tom Bonnert. And I was in this season of life where, if I had to describe it, I would have said I felt like I was out in the ocean, no land in sight, and I was drowning. And so we're sitting in this class, and one of the practices of classes like this is you spend some time praying for each other regularly, and this was one of those classes. And so, because you guys all did that in your universities, right? That's normal. So he was praying, and he was going around, and he was praying for each of us. And when he got to me, his prayer was very simple. He just said, Rachel, I feel like God wants you to know that you are in the very palm of his hand. And all of a sudden, rather than seeing myself out in the ocean, it was like this image came to me, and I could just see myself right there, and God's protective presence and love was just surrounding me. And it did not change everything, but it changed me. It started that process of opening my heart back up to God, of going, wow, I've been really angry with you for the last 3 years, and I have resented you because I thought you had abandoned me in the ocean, but really, this whole time, I have been in the very palm of your hand. And that is what the writer of Ecclesiastes says, is, hey, you're going to get good, you're going to get bad, you don't know whether love or hate awaits you, but remember, you are in God's hands. And for those of us who are certain about God's loving presence, his goodness, that just brings a lot of peace. It brings a lot of peace to know that's where we are, because we don't know whether love or hate awaits us. And so we can take this life as it comes, trusting in God's goodness. So whenever I hear the writer saying, take life as it comes, this is all a vapor, what I hear him saying is, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. This year is actually the 5-year anniversary of my first sabbatical here at Life in Deep Ellum. I get another sabbatical this fall. I'm very excited. I will be out for 5 weeks. and I will miss you. But my first sabbatical, I crashed into that. I did not take it because it was written into our handbook. I took it because I was having a breakdown. I was burned out. I was exhausted. I didn't know if I wanted to keep doing this job, and I had to get out. So I didn't tell the board all that. I just told them, I said, hey, I think that we should start having sabbaticals for our staff. And they said, good idea. And so I went away with the intention of trying to decide if I was actually going to come back and continue to work here. But what I didn't know was that in that space, I was going to meet with God in a way that would change me forever, at least to this point. Forever is a long time. But it significantly shifted me. But the beautiful thing about that sabbatical, about that experience, about meeting with God in that way, is what he did is I was hitting up against all these limits. I just couldn't do it anymore. And if you know me, there is not a lot that I couldn't push through. I mean, this was like a big stinking wall that you weren't and I wasn't, nobody else was going to climb. And I kept hitting up against it, and so I end up in the sabbatical, and I'm sitting there broken against my wall, and what God does is he starts to lovingly encourage me, I was going to say force, to deal with pain that I had been avoiding my whole life. So what happened is I sat there broken against this unmovable wall. Is God started forcing me to work through pain that I had tried my very best to find a way around my whole life. And I thought all the things that I couldn't do anymore were the wall, but what I found is that was just a gift from God. Limits are gifts from God. When we push up against a limit, that is God's grace and mercy saying, hey, you don't have to do it all. You can't do it all. I won't let you do it all. I won't let you keep going without me. I want you to understand that you need me, that you need others, that you need health, that you need healing, that you don't have to carry this pain anymore, that the burdens are too much, and you do not have to keep doing it. That's what limits are. And friends, every season of life has limits, and they are a gift given by God to you. Limits are gifts. So we can go on believing that all of these seasons of life and all of their stress, good or bad, are negatively impacting us. Or we can recognize the pain that we experience, the frustration that we experience, the joy that we experience, whatever emotion you are feeling in this season of life, God is wanting to use it to tell you something about where you are and what he's inviting you into. What change, what growth he's inviting you into. That's what all of these emotions are trying to do, is speak God's heart to you. But we have got to learn how to listen. We've got to learn how to listen. And as we do, we begin to trust God is in every season, every place, whatever side of it you're on. Now, the other thing that the writer's name is Koheleth, but I was afraid if I tried to say that 15 times in the service that I was just going to butcher it. But I'll say it for you once. Koheleth is the name of the writer of Ecclesiastes. And the other thing that he encouraged people to do was enjoy life. Did you hear that message as he's talking about everything being meaningless and everything being hard and not knowing what you're going to get out of life? And then he goes, but enjoy it. Enjoy it now. Don't delay and think at some time in the future I'm going to enjoy life whenever my kid's not a toddler anymore and I'm not running around unable to have any conversations with another adult human being for more than like 30 seconds. Don't delay it until you think you're done with your education and then you're going to stop studying so hard and actually invest in your relationships. Don't keep delaying it. Enjoy life now as it is. I don't know about you, but guys, there have been times where I'm like, the last thing I want to do is enjoy this. What? But that's what he says, is enjoy life as it is. Now, So how do we do that? How do we enjoy life as it is now? We have to learn how to engage it. We have to learn how to engage it from that positive place. And when I say positive, I don't mean live in la-la land. See things for what they are, but then choose a positive place to stand. And go, this is life. This may be the only life I have, and I am going to learn how to enjoy it now. Not at some future undetermined date, but now. And one of the best ways I know to do that is to invest in your relationships. Man, friends, if I were going to tell you there is one thing you could do beginning today that will make you enjoy life more, is invest in your relationships. Did you know that your body has this brilliant stress response built in? It's this mechanism that actually increases your stress resilience. And you want to know what it is? It's been studied. Human connection. Human connection. When you are stressed out, your body releases this hormone called oxytocin, O-X-Y-T-O-C-I-N. And it does that in equal measures with the amount of adrenaline coursing through your body. So you're getting adrenaline and you're getting oxytocin. And if you don't know, oxytocin is what fine-tunes your brain for social instincts. So what that means is it prepares you to do things that are going to strengthen your relationships. It makes you crave close physical contact with friends and support, increases your capacity for empathy. And when you are stressed out, this chemical rushing through your body, it actually makes you want to reach out for support. Now, that is why God has wired our bodies, and isn't it amazing that he does that? But when things are hard or changing, what do we often do instead? We isolate ourselves. It's like everything in our body is going, reach out, you need people. We're like, no, I'm going to feel better if I just go cry in a corner. Sometimes we need to go cry in a corner, but then we need to call someone and say, hey, I just cried in a corner. Often when things are changing, people fall off the planet. I mean, we actually have a colloquialism to describe what happens when people disappear during times of change. Stop that. You guys know that counseling video where I think it's Will Ferrell is giving counseling advice and he just keeps going, stop that. I mean, it's not helpful. But I mean, that's what we need to do. We need to stop that and instead reach out, listen to our amazingly intelligent body that God has created that is telling us we need people. We need to invest in our relationships. And so whether you are trying to grow in health or you are in a situation that you did not choose, you need people. If I had walked into that office last week and said to Mimo, I really want that Cortado, we probably all would have laughed together, and then I would have been fine. That's not what happened. And I had a Cortado this morning also, confession time. I did it. So, if you are stressed out, whether the stress is good or bad, reach out and share it with someone. Really quickly, I want you to take a second and think about who you need to reach out to today. I'm not saying tomorrow or this week, because that's off in the future and we can ignore that and delay it. Who do you need to reach out to today? Who do you need more of in your life? And for some of you, maybe the person at the top of that list is God. Maybe that's who you need more of. And if that's who is at the top of your list, I would say yes and place a second there. Because we need humans too. We need both. We need both. And friends, in the same way that ignoring people in our lives isn't going to make things better, ignoring God when we're mad at him or confused or uncertain is not going to make things better either. We have to engage to grow. Scripture says that those who seek God find him because he is not far from any of us. I have the opportunity to sit with a number of people in spiritual direction. And you want to know why, in a self-interested way, I love doing spiritual direction? It's because what I see over and over and over again is when people show up in their relationship with God, it blows them away how real and present He is. I have not seen it fail yet. When people seek God, they find Him. I was sitting with someone the other day, and they were sharing, you know, their prayer, because that's what we do in spiritual direction, is we help people listen to their prayer. And so he's sharing his prayer, and we're reading this passage that he'd been praying through, and I just start crying, and I'm like, I'm trying to hold it together, you know, but I'm like, I'm sorry. I just see how much God loves you and how Jesus loves you, and I can't, sorry. You know, so, but I mean, that's how real it is. You see this personal and specific way that Jesus is loving all of these people. And it builds my faith and my trust in God. And these people are not so unique and special and different. They're just seeking Him. And when we seek Him, we find Him, because He's not far from any of us. What I know, though, is sometimes we need help connecting. You know, especially if you've been away in this relationship with God and been distant with Him for a while. And so a couple of weeks ago, I taught you guys something called centering prayer, but we didn't get to practice it together because we ran out of time. So I made sure that would not happen today, because this is one of those ways of praying that's very accessible, and it's very transformational. You don't have to know what to say. You don't have to know what to do. If you'll go ahead and put that slide up. The most basic central part of this is that what you are doing is you come to prayer with the intention to consent to say yes to God's loving presence and His activity. And you have a word that centers you in that intention. It's not a mantra that you repeat over and over again, but it's something that you use to draw you back into that intention, that I am in God's loving presence, and I am saying yes to that and to whatever He brings. And so I want us to practice this together this morning, and if you have your phones, you may want to put them on silent. So what you need to do is choose a word. Like I told you guys before, the word that I use is just Jesus. That's what I use to draw me back into God's loving presence and my intention to stay with Him. You can go ahead and get comfortable. I would encourage you to close your eyes for this kind of prayer. And this is going to have a lot more silence. This isn't like when I do the imaginative prayer and talk you through the whole thing. So I'll give you a couple of guiding notes as we go along. But this was mostly done in silence. So I want you to go ahead and take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. In through your nose and out. And in your heart, I just want you to express that intention that, Lord, I'm here to meet with You. I want to say yes to Your loving presence, to Your activity, to being with You. And that's going to be the content of your prayer, is over and over again, as your mind drifts, coming back to that point of saying yes and letting go. Don't judge how this should feel. Just let it be what it is in this moment. When you feel your thoughts begin to drift away from that intention, use that sacred word to bring you back, that in this moment, you exist to consent to God's loving presence and His activity in your life. In the quietness and stillness, you may become aware of different feelings in your body, emotional or physical knots. As they come, just use those as places that you say yes to Jesus again and you let go. Allow each new awareness, each thought, each distraction to be a place where you say, yes, God. I consent to your loving presence. I consent to your action. And it's another place where your heart is open to him. I'm going to go ahead and begin to bring awareness back to the space. Take another deep breath. Let it go. Open your eyes. Typically, this kind of prayer is something that you'll practice ideally for about 20 minutes. Because the way that this prayer operates is if you imagine our existence as this body of water, and we exist generally on the surface, and that's kind of the ordinary awareness of life, and you've got these boats that are thoughts that are flying past us, and we're getting pulled all over the lake. Well, what centering prayer allows us to do is to begin to sink down deeper into our experience of life. And so we go from this ordinary awareness of life into a spiritual awareness of life, where we go, oh, wait, yeah, God is with us all the time. And that's huge to begin to live that way. And sometimes, and you'll go back and forth between these, but then you sink down into this where as the layers, like we talked about last time, get wiped away, you begin to reach your true self. And some forms of this prayer stop there of like, oh, I found my true self. But beneath even that is this union with the divine. And in this place where we really meet with God, and we experience his unconditional love and his unconditional acceptance in this increasingly open posture, it changes everything. It changes everything. And so for those of you who are like, I don't pray because I don't know what to say, I don't know how to do it, this is one of the most helpful forms of prayer. And it takes some time to get into the rhythm of it and to learn how to let go and to bring your thoughts back to that sacred word. But what will happen over time is you will find an increasing openness in your whole life to God. In your whole life. And when there, you will have times where you have thoughts, feelings, barriers that you cannot surrender. And when that happens, you have located your prayer. When you are doing this and there is a thought, there's a feeling, there's an emotion, there's an experience that you can't let go of, you have located your prayer. And so then sometimes you're going to step out of centering prayer and you're just going to talk to God about that thing and get real, real. Okay? So I know not everybody's going to walk out of here and start doing this week. But what I would ask you to do is check your heart and your spirit right now. And if you feel a desire and an invitation to it, don't ignore that. That's how God speaks to us, through our desires, through our intentions. So if you're feeling something draw you into this or some other kind of prayer, do not ignore it. Right? We change little by little. little by little. Lord, would you just bless your people this week? Would you please make your face to shine on them, be gracious and compassionate to them? And I ask that you would give them peace and joy and love and just abundance. May they each know that they are your favorite. And I ask this in Jesus' name. And all God's people say, amen.